America's top diplomat calls China's response to the recent Taiwan visit of the U.S. House Speaker very concerning. The Philippine Education Department allaying fears the looming resumption of full face-to-face classes could turn into super spreaders. The country's unemployment rate remained steady at 6% in June. And later on in the program, we will speak with former Senate President Vicente Soto III to discuss the Alcatraz law. Hi, I'm Pramila Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Topping the news at this hour, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken highlights the importance of cooperation in achieving growth here in Asia. Speaking on ANC's Head Start, Blinken says the Biden administration is very much committed in expanding its engagement with the region. Blinken also lauded the participation of the Philippines in the Indo-Pacific framework, which aims to develop fairer and stronger trade ties between the U.S. and Asia. Blinken was in the Philippines over the weekend as part of his Asia tour.
We're in a region that's going through extraordinary change, and it's also a region that we share. We're a Pacific country as well, and a region that has extraordinary opportunity. We have, in the Indo-Pacific, 60% of the world's population, 40% of its economic output. All of that is here, but security is vitally important to making sure that people can live free, secure lives, economies can flourish, trade, commerce, can move about freely. Mm-hmm. And what underpins that is security. And the partnership between the Philippines and the United States is vital for that. Freedom of navigation, freedom of the seas, the things like fishing that are so important to thousands, tens of thousands of livelihoods. Mm-hmm. All of this is part of the security partnership that we have.
Blinken also weighed in on China's largest ever military drills in Taiwan, which was in response to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's brief but controversial visit to the island.
This reaction by Beijing, including launching 11 ballistic missiles, half of them landed very near Japan, in the sea near Japan, making military maneuvers, putting ships in places near the Taiwan Strait that could have impeded commerce moving through the strait. And so much commerce moves through that strait. That's critical to the global supply chain. If that's interrupted, it's going to be a problem for everyone. So I think this reaction by China is something that's very concerning to countries throughout the region and even beyond. We hope that China engages in the responsible management of what differences we do have.
China's drills surrawning Taiwan draw to a close. Beijing deployed fighter jets, warships, and ballistic missiles in what analysts have described as practice for invading the island. Taiwan deployed its own jets and warships to shadow the drills and placed its shore-based anti-ship missiles and surface-to-air missiles on standby. Taipei insists it will not be cowed by its neighbor. But experts have warned the maneuvers revealed an increasingly emboldened Chinese military capable of carrying out a grueling blockade of the island, as well as obstructing U.S. forces from coming to its aid. Meanwhile, it's business as usual for Filipinos in Taiwan, although they are concerned about the rising tensions with China. They say Taiwan has systems in place to inform them if evacuation becomes necessary.
So far, okay naman po kami dito. Normal naman po yung pamumuhay namin. Still, we go to work. Yung daily activities namin, nagagawa pa rin namin. Meron pong apps ngayon na ibinigay ang Taiwan na kailangan naming i-download sa mga cellphone namin. And then kung saan pupunta, mga nasa 5,771 po na ano yon na pwede naming puntahan na shelter. Dito po sa Taipei yon, pero sa Kaohsiung or other area, wala pa po.
Manila Economic and Cultural Office Chairman Sylvester Better III, meanwhile, says he will be flying to Taiwan soon to meet with the Filipino community. He adds contingency plans are in place should tensions further escalate.
Pupunta po ako doon at siguro mag-stay ako doon pinaka-menos na mga 15 to 20 days. Kailan po kayo pupunta sa Taiwan?
16. I-meet ko sila personally pagdating ko doon.
At ano po ba yung mga, particularly yung mga pag-uusapan po ninyo, sir?
Unang-una, yung kalagayan nila doon, assessment ng kanilang situation, dahil yan po ang utos ng ating Pangulong Marcos na kailangan bantayan natin ang kalagayan ng ating mga OFWs.
There are an estimated 160,000 Filipinos living and working in Taiwan. In other news, Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. set to attend the United Nations General Assembly in New York next month. Philippine Ambassador to the U.S. Jose Manuel Romualdez says Marcos is slated to speak during the first day of the event.
There are many people who are very eager to listen to him. From what I'm told, we have several heads of state who have asked if they could have a meeting with President Marcos. So it's going to be something that's very important for the country. Mm. And I know that President Marcos has been preparing for this. He has already put together a sketch or an outline for his speech. We're ready to sort of like tell the world that we're here. We're going to play a major role in the global community. And more importantly, which is really part of what President Marcos has always said, the recovery from the pandemic is not going to be done by one country alone, but by the world. And that probably will be his message at the United Nations.
More than 80,000 tourists are left stranded in a resort city dubbed as China's Hawaii after authorities imposed a lockdown due to a COVID flare-up. All flights out of the tourism hotspot Sanya City have been canceled. Train ticket sales were also halted. 483 COVID cases were reported there Sunday. Health officials say tourists who want to leave must test negative 5 times over 7 days. Hotels in the city have been asked to offer guests a 50% discount until the travel restrictions ease. Sanya is the latest Chinese city to go into lockdown as China continues to adhere to its zero COVID policy. The Philippines logged 4,621 COVID cases Sunday. That's the fourth straight day the number of new infections exceeded 4,000. Active cases stand at more than 37,000, the highest since April 1st. 18 additional deaths were also recorded. The country's positivity rate has now climbed to nearly 20%. The Omicron BA.5, now the most predominant subvariant in the Philippines, that's according to the Philippine Genome Center. PGC Executive Director Dr. Cynthia Saloma says 85% of their sequence samples are composed of the BA.5 Omicron subvariant. She says health authorities are closely monitoring the continued rise in cases for possible mutations.
But I would like to emphasize that based on our sequencing analysis, di ba sabi natin BA.5 itong wave na ito. And among the BA.5 po na pinakamarami sa ating bansa is BA.5.2. In the US and in Europe po, ang marami is BA.5.1. But in the Philippines po, yung majority of our B.2 subvariants is composed of BA.5.2. Other than that po, wala naman tayong binabantayan. Yan, binabantayan lang po natin itong karamihan ng ating mga BA.5 ay magkakaroon pa ng additional mutations.
President Marcos urges students to get their COVID-19 booster shots before limited face-to-face classes resume later this month. At least 15 million students are expected to return to class this coming school year.
Yung panigurong nakapag-booster shot na ang lahat, lalong-lalo na ang ating mga kabataan, para talagang handa ang pangangatawan nila sa pagbabalik-eskwela. Kasalukuyan ay nasa 15.9 milyong Pilipino ang nakapag-first booster shot na. Samantala, mga 1.2 milyon mahigit ang nakapag-second booster shot. Hindi tayo magsasawang pakiusapan ang ating mga LGU na maging mas agresibo dito sa kampanyang ito.
Marcos also highlighted in his latest vlog entry how a safe resumption of in-person learning will not only benefit students but the economy as a whole.
ating in-transport sector ay muli rin magkakaroon ng karagdagang trabaho. Kailangan rin ng mga estudyante ng mga school supplies at materials. Isama mo na yung pagkain, kaya't ang ating retail industry ay may karagdagang influx din ng salapi. Marami rin mga magulang na mas magkakaroon ng oras makapaghanap buhay kapag nasa eskwelahan na ang kanilang mga anak. Kaya't madadagdagan ang ating workforce.
The Philippine Education Department also downplaying COVID concerns as the reopening of classes in public schools nears. DepEd spokesperson Michael Poa assures parents measures are in place to prevent the spread of COVID in schools.
Our regional offices are coordinating with our counterparts in DOH para po makapaglunsad na tayo ng regular counseling for the unvaccinated. And we are also asking DOH's help para po sa mobile vaccination, doon naman sa papayag, magpabakuna.
As for requests to extend the current school break, DepEd says they will look into the matter. The Teachers Dignity Coalition earlier appealed to DepEd for a 2-month vacation for teachers, citing a string of issues that need to be addressed before the new school year starts.
We will always consider whatever requests or whatever things they file with the Department of Education. We will always consider those grounds and see kung may justifiable grounds. Pero sa ngayon po, we haven't seen the document. But right now, tuloy-tuloy pa rin po yung August 22 na pagbubukas ng klase. This administration is bent on making sure na ma-reduce natin or completely eliminate as much as possible yung administrative tasks ng ating mga guro. Kasi yan po talaga yung pabigat.
President Marcos led the 121st Police Service anniversary of the PNP. Our very own Pia Gutierrez now joins us with that story. Pia, over to you.
Yes, Carmina. President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. called on members of the Philippine National Police to continue to fulfill their mandate with integrity and accountability, and to not allow even a hint of dishonesty and abuse destroy their credibility as servants of the people. The president made a statement during the celebration of the 121st anniversary of the police service this morning in Camp Crame, where he was guest of honor and speaker. In his speech, Marcos reminded Filipino policemen that their use of force must always be reasonable, justifiable, and only undertaken when necessary, and that they should always be fair and impartial, regardless of anyone's race, gender, socioeconomic status, and political and religious affiliation. This is so they can sustain the respect and support of the public to their authority as uniformed police servicemen of the country. The president also thanked the PNP for their continued service and sacrifice to the people despite the risks and dangers that they continue to face every day. Marcos Jr. also acknowledged PNP Chief General Rodolfo Azurin for taking on the task of PNP Chief, as he expressed confidence that he was right in choosing him to lead the Philippine National Police and making the police force stronger, more accessible, more responsive, more inclusive, and more relevant than ever. During the program, the president also led the awarding of outstanding PNP personnel and units, and these included Police Regional Office 5, the Cagayan Police Provincial Office, the Zamboanga City Police Office, and the Urdaneta City Police Station, among others. Following this morning's activities, Carmina, the president will be going to Camp Aguinaldo, also in Quezon City, this afternoon for the change in command ceremony of the leadership of the Armed Forces of the Philippines, where Lieutenant General Bartolome Vicente Vaccaro will be replacing outgoing Chief of Staff General Andres Centino as AFP Chief. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Pia Gutierrez there joining us on the line. Thanks, Pia. Well, last week, a bill seeking to establish an Alcatraz-like facility in the Philippines lapsed into law. The proposed isolated prison will house the country's heinous criminals. Joining us now is one of the advocates of the Alcatraz law, former Senate President Vicente Soto III. Senator, good afternoon to you. Nice to see you again. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carmina. It's wonderful to be in your program again.
All right. So, Senator, we were talking about this the last time I interviewed you. In fact, this is one of the visions of your then tandem with Senator Panfilo Lacson, to have this Alcatraz not only here in Metro Manila, but in several, in at least one in each island. Now, tell us about the guiding principles now that this is the law has just paved the way for this to become reality. What should be the guiding principles as this Alcatraz is to be built here in the country?
Well, first of all, in context, I filed a bill a few years ago because of a research that I stumbled on, which says that all the PDLs, usually, if no longer visited by their relatives, doon nag-uumpisang magluho, as if I may quote that particular line from the research. Doon na nag-uumpisang magluho pag hindi binibisita. So, how can someone from Sultang Kudarat or Negros or anywhere in Mindanao and even Locos Norte go to Muntinlupa frequently without it? I doubt it. So what I did was I filed a bill. It's now a law. It lapsed into law a few days ago. And this will establish, first of all, a separate facility for high-level drug traffickers. That was the meat of the bill. But in truth and in fact, the content of the bill would allow the government now to establish regional NBPs, National Believed Prisons, nationwide, regional, instead of just being concentrated in Muntinlupa. At the start, the suggestion is Luzon, one in Luzon, one in Visayas, and one in Mindanao. We placed in the law that it should be in a suitable location to be determined by the Department of Justice, but their Secretary of Justice. But there are already suggestions, like, for example, in Luzon, the Laor, somewhere in Nueva Ecija, near the camps, is ideal. In Visayas, near the PNP camps in Capiz, and in Mindanao, the Davao Penal Colony. Now, the important thing here is the establishing of a separate facilities for high level drug traffickers and Hilos criminals. It is ideal that we have it also preferably near a military establishment or in an island separate from the mainland. That is where the term Alcatraz came about. It should be located in a secured and secured area, unwarranted contact or communication from outside of the penal institution. It must have a state-of-the-art facility. It's all in the law, with surveillance cameras and the latest information technology and security systems. There will also be a regular random drug testing for PDLs in these separate facilities for high-level criminals.
But Senator, how do you then reconcile that with your statement, the statement that you said a while ago na nag-uumpisang magloko yung PDL pag hindi na binibisita? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. That goes for the ones that will be left that are currently PDLs in Muntinlupa, in the National Believed Prisons, the Bureau of Corrections. Sa kanila, it works for them. That the regular PDLs that we call, iba yung regular at saka iba yung mga high-level drug traffickers. Kaya hinihiwalay natin sila. That is why we're creating a separate facility for them. But as I said, in context, the reason that this came about because of a stumbled on a research that says na pag hindi na binibisita, nagluloko. That goes for the reason why I suggested a Luzon, Visayas, Mindanao or a regional national believed prisons for those that will be left. Kasi pag sinabi natin separate facilities for Hinos criminals, sila lang yun. Hindi yung regular PDLs. Yung PDLs ang intention nung sinasabi ko na tungkol sa mga pamilya.
Okay. Glad that you cleared that up. Pero, Senator, alam naman po natin, and there's a lot of distrust going on, and it's also because of the stories that have come out of prison. Alam naman natin how things are being run, that allegedly syndicates are still able to operate while in the confines of prison. Paano tayo makakasiguro na this will not be the case in this so-called Alcatraz?
Because we will have a, we'll establish a, as I said earlier, a state of the art facilities. Hindi lang surveillance camera, but they should not be allowed unwarranted contact or communication from outside of the penal institution. Mm-hmm. Kaya natin ilalayo sila. Mm-hmm. Preferably an island from out of the mainland of the Philippines. Bilang preference natin. And I've been talking to Secretary Boyen Memulia about this already, and he is preparing. I believe he is starting to study how to enact the law.
Mm-hmm. But Senator, that's insofar as the prisoners are concerned. Let's talk about those who will be guarding them. As I said earlier, there's a lot of distrust in the system. How can we be sure that the prison guards or whoever is going to be put there will not treat this as sort of their little kingdom?
First of all, there must be the latest ITs, you know, and the security systems. And that means na pati yung mga guardia, dapat walang communication. There is already a proposal on how to go about this, you know, like hindi basta, if you place them in an island, separate from the mainland, mahirap na kagad ang communication. No communication whatsoever, except within. So that is one way of doing it. And then we leave it up to the Department of Justice, of course, and the Bureau of Corrections, to make sure that the guards are being honest to their word. Mm-hmm. But by the way, we already also, I also filed a bill, and if I'm not mistaken, it was enacted already, which gives the a higher penalty. There is a higher penalty for infidelity in custody of a prisoner. You know, currently the in the revised penal code, the provision which says infidelity in custody of prisoner is about 6 months. Hmm. 6 months imprisonment. My proposal is infidelity in custody of a prisoner. Pag nakawala yung prisoner, yung sentensya ng prisoner ang sentensya mo. I think that will shake them up. That will definitely shake them up.
Mm-mm. Pero paano naman din po yung on the aspect of human rights abuse? If it's outside of the pry, if it's way out of, you know, the prying eyes of the public, the transparency will only be insofar as the system is concerned. Mula sa island, papunta sa Bucor, ganun lang po ang sistema, no? Paano na po yung safeguards against abuse?
We will leave that, of course, to the Department of Justice to be able to. That has not been taken up in the law itself, particularly. But perhaps in the IRR that the Department of Justice will do, perhaps they can take a look at that particular issue.
Mm-hmm. And finally, on this topic, how will this ultimately benefit the public?
I've said this before. The problem of illegal drugs, that is the only crime wherein the criminal is a victim and the victim is a criminal. Now, when you incarcerate a rapist, he will no longer be able to rape. You incarcerate a murderer, he will no longer be able to commit murder unless sila doon sa loob. But a high-level drug trafficker incarcerated, nakakapag-operate pa eh. He can still operate. And that is the reason that we want them stopped. We want this particular move so that it will no longer be possible for them to operate when they are behind bars already.
Mm. And of course, when they operate, it's the public that bears the brunt because they still...
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Precisely. Correct, Carmina.
All right.
Correct.
Now, speaking of the public, Senator, what can you say about the backlash that your former colleagues at the Senate are now facing because of the now viral video showing them merrymaking, partying, while the country faces a lot of problems?
Well, It was the birthday of Senator Sonny Angara, so I refuse to comment.
Kasama ho ba kayo doon?
I'm sorry. Wala ako, wala ako.
Okay. Pero
I was invited. Mm-hmm. I was invited, but I sent already a video.
Okay, so we're not going to talk about that, but what is your comment on how the public is reacting to it?
Sorry, my signal's bad. Mm. I'm still in the airport.
What can you say about how the public is reacting to it? What can you say about how the public is reacting to it?
My signal's...
Mm. Senator, did you get the last question?
Well,
go ahead.
I don't know. I have not heard about it except that I saw it in the newspaper this morning. Commonly that is how the public will always react when they are encountering problems and issues with the.
We just lost former Senate President Vicente Soto III there. He was commenting on the backlash that his former colleagues are now facing because of a now viral video showing them in a merrymaking mood celebrating the birthday of Senator Sonny Angara. And that has garnered a lot of criticisms online. We were asking the Senate President about his reaction to that. Offhand, he said that he didn't want to comment on that, but he did have a lot to say about the Alcatraz law now being a law, the so-called Alcatraz law. Ultimately, he said this will benefit the public because if you have the drug dealers, for example, the big-time drug traffickers there in that facility, then they won't be able to carry on with their activities selling illegal drugs that ultimately harm the public. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, new COMELEC Chairman George Garcia will join us to discuss reforms he plans to implement at the poll body. Dateline Philippines will be right back. Stay with us here on ANC. And we're back. You're still watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. America's top diplomat calls China's response to the recent Taiwan visit of the U.S. House Speaker very concerning. The Philippine Education Department allaying fears the looming resumption of full face-to-face classes could turn into super spreaders. And the country's unemployment rate remained steady at 6% in June. Visitors continue to arrive at the Heritage Park in Taguig City for the last day of the wake of former President Fidel V. Ramos. Sherian Torres now joins us with an update. Share, what more can you tell us?
Yes, KC, as of today, guests or visitors continue to flock here at the Heritage Park where the wake of former President Fidel Ramos continues. But for Sunday or yesterday, the family or the organizer of this wake was able to record a total of 599 private individuals who paid their last respect to the leader who many said was able to put the Philippines back to the world's economic radar. This volume of visitors is aside from the unrecorded number of current and former government officials, friends, relatives, and other private individuals who have already visited the wake of Ramos, or FVR, to many Filipinos. 63-year-old Roger Ocampo has been visiting FVR's wake since Saturday. A former migrant worker, he was among those who campaigned for FVR to his fellow overseas Filipino workers, Ocampo says. For Ocampo, FVR is an idol who really cares for OFWs. Former barangay chairman Felix Suico Jr. and his family, who flew in from Cebu for a short vacation here in Manila, decided to include a visit to FVR's wake this morning upon the prodding of his youngest daughter, Kate, who only knows FVR through her history books. The elder Suico says they really want to pay their last respect to the man who led the Philippines so well. Meantime, FBR's former NEDA Undersecretary Rolando Tumpalan opted to join the last day of public viewing as he remembers his boss as a president who had his heart at the right place. He also shared how they felt while serving the government under FBR's wings. Here's a portion of Tumpalan's statement.
Very, very high because number one, his brand was completed staff work. In other words, hindi pwede shabby, just give him something. He wants to make sure that it is well studied, but not studied to death. He was also somebody who valued people working dedicatedly in government service. That's why we were high in terms of morale, and he was a leader by example.
Meantime, Carmina, those who would like to take part in FBR's wake are being requested by the family and the organizers to come before the 4 p.m. conclusion of the last day of public viewing today. The public are also being asked not to wear shorts, sleeveless, or tattered jeans if they will come here to pay a visit. The public can also witness FBR's funeral, according to ceremony organizers, provided that they would follow the military regulations inside the libingan ng mga bayani. And according to Army spokesperson Colonel Cerces Trinidad, those who will attend are required to have a negative RT-PCR test result. For those who cannot afford the test, FBR's hearse will pass through the Bayani Road so people can express their last respect along that area. For tomorrow, Carmina, there is no final time for departure yet, but the target is for FBR's remains to arrive at the Libingan ng mga Bayani at 10:30 in the morning. This will be followed by the funeral procession and graveyard ceremonies and services. And the entire ceremonies will end at 12 noon. Carmina?
Thanks a lot. Sherian Torres there joining us live. Back here in the newsroom, apart from his achievements in public service, the late President Ramos was also a funny and supportive grandfather. That's according to one of his grandsons, Sam Ramos Jones. Jones says Ramos encouraged him and his cousins to pursue whatever career they wanted to.
You know, one question we've gotten a lot is whether there was any pressure on us to follow his path, either in the military or in politics. And I can say, you know, our family has done a really tremendous job of letting us grow in our own ways and supporting those pursuits, whatever they are. So, you know, whether that's music or other career choices that aren't necessarily in the military, we don't actually have anyone in the military from our generation, but I think that's okay. And, you know, one of the things that he would repeat often to us is that there's so many ways to serve your country. There's so many ways to serve your community.
Well, new COMELEC Chairman George Garcia looking to implement reforms at the PO body. He also vows that COMELEC will remain impartial and independent. Chairman Garcia now joins us here on the program. Chairman, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Ma'am Carmina, and good afternoon to all the televiewers of your program.
Right. Things have been said about the many reforms that the COMELEC needs at this point. Question now is, how much of a reformer will you be, Chairman?
Definitely will push to the limit whatever reforms are necessary for purposes of ensuring that future electoral exercises will be orderly, free, and at the same time, independent. So meaning we have to ensure that the commissioner election will always be independent and impartial. At the same time, that we must be able to ensure that the laws that we are going to implement and execute are updated laws, not necessarily laws which are already outdated and can no longer answer the questions of the modern time. Hmm. And so what we're going to do is to push for legislation that we believe will honestly initiate reforms within and without or outside the commissioner elections.
But already, Chairman Garcia, you're already being criticized for the new COMELEC building that you want to be built. How will this benefit the public ultimately, and why is there seemingly a sense of urgency to build this new COMELEC building?
Yes, ma'am. For the information of everybody, we have been leasing several offices, several floors of the different buildings, including warehouses. And if you're going to total or summarize all the expenses incurred for purposes of leasing this property, it would cater indeed to the benefit of the public that the COMELEC will have its own building rather than spending a lot of money for purposes of renting the different places. So number one, number two is just to, for us to properly coordinate and synchronize all our actions, especially if you are just housed in one building. We have a three-hectare property at Macapagal Avenue, and sayang naman po yung property na if that will be cannot be utilized. Nasa amin na yon ever since several years ago. And perhaps it's really high time that we start building the edifice or building the home of the commissioner election.
Pero ano po ang pakinabang ng publiko dito?
Yes, ma'am. It will press practically makakatipid ang sobra ang publiko. Number two po, masisigurado namin ang integrity ng at credibility ng aming lahat ng ginagawa. Try to imagine if you will have your own warehouse for all your machines, for all your equipment in-house in one place, very far from Manila. Nandun po sa Santa Rosa, we have some a warehouse in the Pilpos. So medyo magkakahiwalay po, and it's very difficult to monitor. So will that benefit the public? Definitely and surely. Because during the election, lagi na lang kine-question, we cannot observe, we cannot watch whatever the community is doing. So kung nasa isang area lang po kami, nagagawa po namin lahat yung at ma-ensure namin ng transparency. But I would like to guarantee our people, Ma'am Carmina, na this is not the primary goal of the commissioner election. This is secondary. Reforms pa rin po, good governance pa rin ang primary aspiration namin. Ang sa akin lang po, perhaps it's high time, maybe a matter of a little amount can do for purpose of starting it. It can be built for 10 years. It can be built for 12 years. Mas start lang po. We are fully aware of the economic crisis that we have right now, especially the need for money to finance our pandemic response. And that's why ayaw namin sumabay doon sa mga problema po na yon. We only brought that up simply because of look at what happened when the fire got in certain part of the COMELEC space, COMELEC office. So maybe pinag-isipan na po namin dati pa yon, baka naman pwedeng ma-push under this administration.
Mm-hmm. Chairman, you mentioned a while ago that you will actively push for legislation that will aid you in the reforms that you want to happen within the commission. But will these pieces of legislation actually address the lack of trust the public has in the commission?
Yes, ma'am. I will guarantee that definitely mawawala na yung mistrust ng tao, hopefully, sa ating commissioner election. We were able to do that in the 2022 election, and we promise to likewise actively do that again in the 2025 and the four other forthcoming electoral exercises. So ano pong ibig sabihin? The hands of the commissions are so tied in the past electoral exercises simply because there were no legislations allowing us to do further, to move further and to act further. Ano pong ibig sabihin? We have a 1985 Omnibus Election Code. 1985 comparing now to 2022, definitely yung panahong yun, ma'am, manual election pa, batas ang pambansa pa, yung minimension doon. Now, if we're going to revise, not only amend the Omnibus Election Code, surely we can do everything legally possible as mandated by the Constitution, such as, for example, the computerization of the election. Number two, yung mga sinasabi before, ensuring that all those who are candidates will have to appear in COMELEC debates, halimbawa, wala po tayong legislation. But so if we can amend or revise our present laws, then all of these things will be properly remedied.
You talked about computerization, Chairman, but in 2016, you questioned Smartmatic over discrepancies in the electronically transmitted COCs. You were then the lawyer of then VP candidate Senator Ferdinand Marcos Jr. Now that you're COMELEC chairman, will you see to it that the relationship the COMELEC has with Smartmatic is terminated?
I cannot preempt whatever action Ma'am Carmina with the COMELEC and bank will be doing as far as the conduct of bidding in the future is concerned, such as, for example, we really have to answer the question, are we really going to do away with our 90,000 vote counting machines? Yung mga pumalpak, yung mga luma na, are we going to have new supplier for the vote counting machine? What are the specifications that we are going to lay down as far as the new machines are concerned? And how much are we going to allot for purposes of having new machines, for example, for the 2025 election? These are the questions which really we have to be discussed. But I will guarantee the public, the stakeholders, they will have a part in any decision that the COMELEC will be doing as far as the computerization of the 2025 and future elections are concerned.
There are suggestions that maybe we can go hybrid, maybe go back to manual. Some are saying that just to ensure transparency, just so the public can see what is actually transmitted.
Personally, I had been supporting the hybrid system of election when Senator Aimee Marcos was then the chairperson of the Committee on Electoral Reforms of the Senate. We were able to pass the legislation, at least as far as the Senate is concerned, but there was no sufficient time. That's why it was set aside. But next time that Congress will pursue with the hybrid system of election, definitely, at least personally, I will support that, and I will try to convince the members of the commission, the other commissioners, the NBank, that we should likewise support this system because this ensures greater transparency. Hindi lang po sapat na natatransmit natin ng mabilis ang result. Dapat yung natatransmit natin ay accurate and the people can really see that their votes are being counted.
Tell me something, Chairman Garcia. When you were an election lawyer, what did you see that made you question the system, and what do you intend to do with it now that you're chairman of the COMELEC?
The lack of transparency from the first phase to the last phase of proclaiming the winner, we will have to ensure that the public will always be informed, that all stakeholders will have not only being able to observe, but will have complete participation for purposes of at least ensuring a credible and honest election. Transparency is the key, and accountability is likewise the key. We have to ensure that. Otherwise, regardless of all the efforts that the COMELEC will give to ensure an honest and credible election, if the people does not believe not only on our credibility, not only on the system that we are putting in place, then we will not be able to get that support from the commission, from the people, and from the entire nation in general.
Okay, I want to talk now about PDP Laban. We know about the division level decision. When is the UNBank expected to come out with their decision regarding the legitimacy of the PDP Laban, the question on the legitimacy of the Pimentel-led PDP Laban faction?
Yes, Ma'am Carmina, I think there are not only three or five cases that need the immediate resolution by the Commission on Election. One is, of course, the PDP Laban controversy, and the other cases involving party lists and such other major local controversies. I will definitely convince the members of the Commission, the one who are to write the decision, to immediately come up with a decision. The problem, Ma'am Carmina, is as of this time, we're only five members of the commission, the chairman and the four commissioners. Supposedly, we should have been seven members of the NBank. There are certain cases, and I do not want to preempt or tell you whether that will involve the case of PDP Laban. There are certain cases where the voting is tied, for example, two in favor and two and against. Even if the chairman will vote in either of the side, then we will not have a majority. In the case of Australia versus the COMELEC, the Supreme Court clarified that there must always be four votes in the commission. So I will have to look into whether these are the same, or the one that you are mentioning, the case, the PDP Laban case, is one of the cases whereby the voting is a split one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but if in case the UNBank reverses its division level decision, what's going to happen to the Kusi faction?
I cannot at this point, ma'am, tell you whatever will happen, because that will depend on the disposition of the NBank in the resolution. The resolution likewise and should always contain whatever will happen after the decision is promulgated. So at this point, ma'am, I do not want to preempt that by answering your question, simply because whoever will be the losing party in the NBank case will definitely have another remedy. And if I'm going to answer your question, it might dictate to the other losing party whatever the remedy is, or it might likewise be prejudicial to the winning party.
Understood. Let's go now to the House of Representatives. Chairman Garcia, as you know, there now is a bill against turncoatism. How will this help or aid in the reforms that you want to happen in the whole electoral system?
Definitely, it's a great help. during the time of former Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago, she already proposed that piece of legislation, although it did not materialize. It never went into that legislative mill. However, this time, hopefully, that should at least merit the attention of the members of Congress. Napaka-importante po yon. Why? Because sa amin po, usually, Ma'am Carmina, nagkaka-problem tayo when it comes to the period of substitution. Yung period ng substitution natin, you were once before a member of this party, and just because you wanted to substitute in the candidate of the other party, then you are going to change your party affiliation. That is very, very problematic. That would usually raise a lot of questions and a lot of cases will be filed. In order to prevent cases from the Comelec being flooded with all of these cases of issues of substitution, then this is the right time using this law as our basis.
Mm. What about the party list law? I mean, no less than the former President Duterte has also said that not only has it been mocked in so many words, but that, you know, rich families or at least scions of political dynasties have actually found the back door to be able to enter the House of Representatives. Go ahead.
Definitely, Ma'am Carmina, definitely I will push for the amendment of Republic Act 7941 or the party list. Napakatagal na po na batas na yan. And let's face it, perhaps there is truth to the saying that it's being bastardized by certain sectors, or it's being abused by certain groups, yung party list law natin, simply because the law is so general, the law is not that specific. At the same time, there are several loopholes of that law, when in fact even our Supreme Court had changed its decision from this decision to another decision because of the absence of the law which will plug the loopholes in Republic Act 7941. When the proper time comes, especially if somebody will try to file an amended bill or a bill amending the Republic Act 7941 or the party list law, I will guarantee you, as the chairman, I will actively participate in such a deliberation. I'll try to convince the members of Congress that first and foremost, the primary purpose of the party list law is to ensure greater participation of the marginalized and the underrepresented. Marginalized and underrepresented. The law should ensure that.
Chairman Garcia, you have said that you will be independent. You've said that many times, that you will be needing the support of President Marcos to institutionalize all these reforms that you've just mentioned. How confident are you that you will get the support of your former client?
Not only, Ma'am, that I'm going to get the support or ask for the support. Maliligawan ko po ang ating Pangulo when it comes to electoral reforms. But definitely, it's an entire legislative process, meaning from the House of Representatives, even to the Senate of the Philippines, and of course to the Executive Department. I'll try to explain why this proposed bill, why this proposed measure is needed by the Commissioner election and needed to ensure transparency, accountability, ensuring that democracy will be alive through election. And therefore, we will be needing definitely budget. We will be definitely needing new laws. And again, we'll be needing the teeth to implement these laws. Ako naman po naniniwala ako na napakaganda ng agenda ng ating Pangulo when it comes to at least reforming a lot of things in this country. And electoral reform, I think, is one of those in the agenda.
Mm-hmm. At ano pong masasabi ninyo dun sa mga hindi pa rin po naniniwala sa inyo? At ano pa rin po ang masasabi ninyo dun sa mga nagsasabi po na kaya nyo po magagawa itong lahat ng reformang ito ay dahil lang po dati yung kliyente si Pangulong Marcos?
Ang reform naman po ay hindi lamang nakadepende sa isang tao. Hindi lang po nakadepende sa isang pinuno. Ang reforma hindi lang sa isang institusyon katulad ng commissioner election will depend on a lot of things, most especially doon sa mga tao na naandyan mismo sa institution. before reforming anybody else or anything else, the commissioner election within must reform itself. Our people, our society, our purpose, we have to reform everything. Diyan po dapat magsisimula yan. The president will only help us if we can show to the president, we show to the executive, show to the legislative our firm desire to reform whatever we are going to do. Yung pampera ng bayan, nagagastos namin ng tama. Yung bang pag-hold namin ng conduct na election talaga bang impartial. So, yung pong reform, hindi lamang po sa relationship namin ni Presidente, kahit pa former, sa lahat-lahat. And so, doon sa mga may doubt, tama po naman yung inyong doubt sa akin. Tama rin naman po na mag-entertain kayo ng mga agam-agam. But try to give us an opportunity. At least when I was a commissioner of the commissioner election, modestly I said I was able to prove that I can separate my profession with what is really good for the country. We were able to hold a very clean and honest election, regardless of the belief of anybody or somebody. But at least give us an opportunity to prove that it's not only a one-man commission, it's a collegial body, and mine is only one vote. Mm-hmm.
And is that your way of saying that moral reform is needed in the COMELEC, Chairman?
Definitely, ma'am. Definitely, moral reform is a must in this institution.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. COMELEC Chairman George Garcia, thanks for joining us today. Take care. Keep safe. And back here in the newsroom, more Filipinos were jobless in June, even as the Philippines' unemployment rate remained steady at 6%. Our very own Warren de Guzman now joins us with more details. Warren, what more can you tell us?
Well, good afternoon, Carmina. Like you said, the Philippine unemployment rate was at 6% in June, same as May. However, because of an increase in the size of the workforce, an additional 62,000 Filipinos joined the jobless ranks, pushing the total to 2.99 million. The total workforce was at 49.58 million in June, of 570,000 month-on-month. National statistician Undersecretary Dennis Mapa says the good news is a majority of those new job seekers found work. The bad news is there were significant losses in retail and manufacturing. Wholesale and retail lost 1.22 million jobs month-on-month, including hardware, paint and glass, non-specialized stores, and motor vehicle repair and maintenance. Manufacturing of baked goods also lost tens of thousands of jobs. MAPA says belt tightening by consumers may have led to lower sales and job losses in those non-essential retail segments, while the high cost of flour, sugar, and other inputs likely contributed to job losses in the manufacture of baked goods. MAPA also had some interesting observations regarding the age of Filipinos who joined the workforce in June. Based on the data, MAPA said the biggest contributors to the increase in labor force participation that month from May were Filipinos aged 35 to 44 and 65 and above. MAPA says he supposes these individuals may have been motivated by a need to augment household income and cover expenses. Social Economic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan says the safe and full reopening of the economy will reinvigorate job creation. And looking on the bright side, Balisacan also noted the June data showed an increase in full-time workers, reflected by the average work hours per week, and a 780,000 month-on-month decline in underemployed individuals. These are workers who want more work or better-paying jobs. Overall, unemployment has averaged 6% for the first half of 2022. This is the best yet for the pandemic, but it is still higher than the 5.1% jobless rate average of 2019. Overall, the number of unemployed is also higher by 700,000 compared to pre-pandemic levels. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Warren de Guzman, reporting to us on the line. Take care, Warren, and you keep safe. In sports, the best local team in the Premier Volleyball League Invitational Conference will represent the Philippines in the AVC Cup for Women. The Philippine National Volleyball Federation originally tapped the core of the National University's women's volleyball team to represent the Philippines, but they were not granted the go signal to compete, compelling the national team to pull out of the Invitational Conference as well. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.